Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Today is June 23rd, 2026. And there is a brutal sell-off in tech that is underway as we speak ahead of the opening bell. So what the heck happened this morning? Well, we got to go back to yesterday. It appears that this sell-off started yesterday. We had U.S. hyperscalers in particular, like the big AI spenders. We're all down yesterday a couple of percent. It wasn't terribly severe, but they were down quite a bit. In particular, SpaceX was down a lot yesterday. We'll zero in on SpaceX in just a minute here. But the NASDAQ closed down a little more than 300 points yesterday. Again, a bad day, but not a brutal day. And then we got the South Korean KOSPI index. Once when stocks opened up in South Korea yesterday, they started selling off. And they did not stop until the closing bell rang. They even triggered one of their little circuit breakers. They had a 20-minute break. Selling resumed as soon as that break was over. The KOSPI index dropped 10% yesterday. All right. Keep in mind, that is not a single stock. We're talking about the index dropped by 10%. That's the average. It was a horrible day. Of course, the sell-off was led by memory stocks in South Korea. Names like Samsung, SK Hynix, obviously they have been at the epicenter of this ridiculous blow-off in anything semiconductor related. And that all came to a head yesterday. Now we're looking at this morning. The last time I checked, the NASDAQ was down over 900 points ahead of the opening bell. Things are very volatile here. Who knows by the time the opening bell rings what that's going to be. We've got the dollar is stronger. We've got Bitcoin sharply lower. Gold and silver are being dragged down along with it. Dogs and cats living together. Mass hysteria. Actually, that being said, it's somewhat contained to tech. The Dow is doing all right. All three indexes in the U.S. are down here, but the Dow is only down a couple of points. So right now, with the exception of like the dollar and Bitcoin and gold and silver, which are trading like risk assets right now for some reason, we're actually seeing other stocks holding up okay, given the circumstances. Now, I told you we were going to zero in on SpaceX in a minute. And here's what happened here. Yesterday, we covered this late last week. SpaceX went right to the bond market. All right. They IPO'd last week. The IPO went spectacularly. They IPO'd at 135. It started trading at 150 when it first opened. It ended up going to like 200 and change. It was a ripping IPO. And then as soon as they raise that 75, 80 billion in the IPO, they come out and they say, you know what, we're going to pig out. We want more. And they announce a $20 billion bond offering. And I guess they just finalized that yesterday. And the fact that they're going to the bond market somehow with an investment grade rating, even though the company loses money and has no foreseeable path to profitability, the market didn't like it. The fact that they're raising $20 billion in debt after raising $80 billion in the IPO, and rightly so. And so yesterday, SpaceX sold off more than 16%. And let's not take a minute to appreciate just how big of a sell-off is, because we're all like, all right, well, yeah, SpaceX, they had a really good IPO. It's a volatile stock. Sure, why not? Guys, that was the second largest single-day sell-off for any stock in history. More than $400 billion in market cap wiped out in one trading session. Only one other time in history has a single company lost more value than that, and that was NVIDIA in January of this year when they lost over $500 billion in one trading session. Volatility, typical hall signs at the top, right? So what's going on here? You know, besides the fact that we know we're in a bubble, right? Everybody knows we're in a bubble. Everybody knows AI is in a bubble. Everybody knows all this CapEx has been wasted money. And we're all just sitting around the fire waiting for something to go poof. And then we're all going to be so surprised when it finally happens, right? Nobody saw this coming. That's probably what it is, guys. There was no, I go back through the news. I can't find any one trigger that set this off. Maybe the SpaceX bond offering, or maybe this market was just so freaking top heavy that when the Jenga tower finally does fall over, nobody's surprised. It didn't matter who bumped it or who breathed too hard. It was going to go over anyway. Now, we've actually got another SpaceX story this morning. SpaceX has just signed a compute deal with a company called Reflection AI, which I've never even heard of them, even though apparently they've got like a $2.5 billion valuation. Reflection AI, who is financed by NVIDIA, of course they are. They are going to be renting the Colossus 2 data center for $150 million a month. Now, first of all, that's interesting because Reflection AI only had $20 million of revenue in all of 2025 combined, but somehow they're going to pay XAI $150 million a month. Oh, okay, let's gloss right over that. Here's the fact that SpaceX is a neocloud now. And I mentioned this because it was just the other day they signed a big compute deal with Anthropic. And then shortly after that, they signed a compute deal with Google. SpaceX built all these data centers because, oh, we're going to be the world leader in AI. And we've got this $28 trillion total addressable market out there. Now that they've built it, they're renting it because, well, their AI efforts have been largely fruitless, if you will. They haven't made any money off of it. Grok has very few paid users. And people on Twitter saying Grok, is this true? Isn't a business model. And so they're acting like a neocloud, like CoreWeave or Nebius. The only thing is they're not valued like a neocloud. They're valued like OpenAI or Anthropic. So again, market just so top heavy, this was bound to happen. Also, we've got some other news that's happening this morning. This stuff flying below the radar. Two geopolitical stories that really bear watching here, and I don't see a lot of coverage in it anywhere else. And I got to send a shout out to my moderator, Mish. She's been Johnny on the spot with the research on these subjects. We've got some news out of Iran here. First, what everybody is talking about in Iran, $12 billion of Iranian funds is apparently about to be unfrozen. Two installments of $6 billion as part of these ongoing negotiations. Yeah, we're giving them money. Maybe it's their money that we froze years ago, but we're still giving them money. And again, it's pretty hard to go around and tout this as a big win when you're paying the people that you supposedly just vanquished. I'm pretty sure that's not how that works. And then now the U.S. is trying to save face, saying, "Oh, they're going to spend the money on American wheat and soybeans." No. You're not going to farmer love your way out of this. All right, that doesn't mean anything. Yeah, great. They're going to sell some soybeans, which aren't selling because of the other fight that you started and then fought half-assed in the trade war. What are they going to do? Money that they otherwise would have spent on food, now they're just going to spend that money on missiles. So all this money that we're releasing here, it's just going to end up lobbed at our ships someday, or lobbed at Israel, or lobbed at the Gulf Coast neighbors, or in the form of terrorist attacks all over the world. Take your pick, right? Hamas, Hezbollah, the Houthis, Islamic Jihad, all the Iranians fund them all. Now, while all that is going on, what nobody is talking about is the Iranian banks. Now, this is interesting. We've got an OSINT channel that I follow. Is talking about widespread Iranian bank service disruptions this morning. And apparently, this has been traced back to a hack, a cyber attack that took place 10 days ago. And four of the biggest banks in Iran have basically been shut down this whole time. Now, there's very little news out there about this cyber attack. What news you can get is from sources that you at least have to be a little bit of a little bit of an asterisk attached to it. But when a cyber attack takes down banks for 10 days, it's less and less chance that's actually a cyber attack, and more of a chance that those banks needed a reason to go down, kind of the same way the crypto exchanges go down for maintenance every time Bitcoin sells off. Now, keep in mind, the whole reason that this war started was because the United States believed it was vulnerable to collapse because of all of the protests that were happening in Iran in January when the Iranian government started slaughtering their own people in the street. Thousands, maybe even tens of thousands of people were killed in these protests because of the economic situation in Iran, because the Iranian currency was collapsing after a major bank failure that happened in Iran back in, I think it was November or December of last year. There was a major bank failure in Iran. Again, we don't know exactly what's going on. There's this hacking group is claiming responsibility, and they're saying it was an isolated cyber attack, but it's now been 10 days, and you've got banks all over the country aren't working. Did we just throw in the towel and pay them all this money right as their banking system was collapsing from the financial pressure of the sanctions in this war? I don't know. But it's really hard to get accurate information on the ground in Iran because a lot of the internet is still shut down. But nobody's talking about this banking situation happening in Iran. Something else that not a lot of people are talking about is fuel shortages in Russia. Now, yesterday we talked about how they had shut down fuel sales to civilians in Crimea. Only the government could get the fuel because of the Iranian drone attacks along that M14 highway, plus some of the attacks in Kerch. But the Iranians have also been attacking energy infrastructure all over Russia. And now this morning, we're getting stories about six different regions of Russia, some of them I can even pronounce, where there is some form of gas rationing happening, either outright bans of sale of gas to civilians or limits on how much gas you're allowed to buy, or you can only fill up your car, you can't fill up gas cans. They're worried about panic buying and hoarding. Six different regions in the country now. Again, guys, something major is about to give in this Ukraine-Russia conflict. I don't know what it is. It's either going to be a major escalation, a major offensive somewhere, or the Russians are just about to withdraw. But when you're rationing gasoline all over the country, that's not good, especially at a time when drones are landing on your capital. Now, we've also got another story going on in Spain here. BBVA, Spanish bank, is selling $2.3 billion worth of synthetic or significant risk transfers, or SRTs. And we've talked about SRTs on this channel quite a bit here over the last couple of months or so. SRTs is basically a way that banks move risk of loans that they've made off their books and onto the books of investors. Typically, pension funds is who buys these SRTs. But in this case, the Spanish bank is selling $2.3 billion of SRTs, all tied to data center debt. They are parking that garbage in people's pensions. Somehow I told you so, just doesn't quite seem to cover it. And last but not least, we've got another private credit blow up this morning. Apollo Debt Solutions has halted redemptions at 5% in their private credit fund after 17% requested redemption. So that 17% in withdrawal requests was up from 11% last quarter, once again gated at 5%. The people wanting their money back in private credit, it is getting worse, not better. And again, they're not getting it back because we all know the loans those private credit funds are holding are not worth what they're advertising. And so they're just telling people, don't worry, your money's safe, even though you can't have it back. And somehow they're able to do that because people signed away their rights when they joined those funds in the first place because they were deceptively marketed to retail investors. Guys, there is a lot going on in the world today. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's happening. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button. So you can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with the melon heads because we do this every business day. And there it is, the S&P not looking so hot this morning, down 1.46%, about 109 points in the red. And again, when we get to the NASDAQ, you're going to see it's a lot worse than that. The Dow is holding up pretty well, down less than 0.5%, 234 points. All right, it's not a good day for the Dow, but considering what just happened in South Korea and what you're about to see in the NASDAQ, the Dow is holding up remarkably well. And then there's the NASDAQ. Yikes, baby, yikes. 935 points in the red, 3.09% lower this morning ahead of the opening bell for the NASDAQ. And again, this is an absolute bloodbath in tech that's going on here, down 900 points. But that's a 3% decline. Keep in mind, the South Korean index just dropped 10% in a day. So what would that be? Almost a 3,000-point decline in the NASDAQ in one day if we were to match the move that was just made in South Korea. Yeah, a little bit of volatility, you think. Looking over at the dollar, it is stronger this morning by 26 basis points, 101.28. You've got people running to cash. Cash is becoming more scarce. And so the price of cash is going up, and the dollar is becoming more valuable against its foreign counterparts. Looking over at the bond market, we've got a little bit of a flight to safety maybe going on in the middle of the yield curve, but then we've got those long-term rates are actually higher here now. This is interesting. The 30-year yield pretty much unchanged here, 4.948, up by a fraction of a point. The 10-year yield is down a point and a half, 4.487, hardly a flight to safety, really. The 2-year yield is at 4.196, lower by about 3.5 points. And the 1 month is off by half a point, 3.624. Considering how wacky things are in stocks this morning, you'd think we'd have a little bit more movement in bonds. And by the way, on the subject of bonds, let's just check in on the UK 10-year gilt. That yield is lower again this morning by 3 basis points. Again, so far the bond market is digesting the resignation of Keir Starmer over in the UK. It seems most of the volatility was ahead of that resignation. Now it's already priced in. All right, let's look over at Bitcoin. Not doing so hot this morning. Bitcoin is lower by $1,700. It's priced on Coinbase, 62,000, $173. That's the lowest we've seen in about 2 weeks for Bitcoin. And I think most of that is being driven by the sell-off in tech this morning. Looking over at the commodities board, we've got gold. Once again, gold trading like a risk asset. I just can't say I'm comfortable with this. $4,109 for spot gold, lowered by $82, almost 2% lower. Silver getting killed today, $61.65, lower by $3.41, 5.25% to the downside. Again, though, long term, I still like the shiny. That being said, guys, if we're in for some major stock volatility, get ready for some fireworks in the silver space if that happens. Copper lower by 3%, platinum off by 2.3%. Palladium lower by 2.9%, and crude oil is lower by about 21 cents here, a quarter of a percent, $73.69 a barrel for August WTI futures. All right, let's talk about the big story this morning, though. Stocks hit by tech sell-off as Korean shares plunge. Just making sure my tech is okay here. I am. A sell-off cascaded across global markets as investors turned jittery about high-flying tech stocks and frothy valuations. South Korea's Kospi Index plunged 10% from a record high. Memory stocks, many of which are riding triple-digit gains this year, recorded some of the steepest losses. SpaceX was poised to fall below its first-day opening price of $150. It's since risen from that level. NASDAQ 100 futures tumbled almost 3%, while those for the S&P slid 1.5%. In Seoul, chip giants SK Hynix and Samsung slumped more than 10%. Intel and Micron led a broader decline among chip makers in U.S. pre-market trading, while SpaceX fell 4.3%. That's after that big decline yesterday in SpaceX. Chinese equities in Hong Kong entered a bear market. Tuesday's sell-down in chip makers, among the biggest beneficiaries of the AI trade, comes a day after a retreat from hyperscalers. As investors question whether future returns can justify current spending, no, they cannot. Are we still asking that? Are we still posing that as if it's a maybe? Guys, we've been doing this for 4 years and none of them are still making any money. Of course, future returns do not justify their current spending. Let's move on. The prospect of less accommodative U.S. monetary policy is also fueling the retreat. Looks like Kevin Warsh may be getting in on this sell-off as well. Some of the recent performance in stocks has been highly speculative, fueled by a passion from retail investors for short-term gains, red gambling, said Mark Downing, Chief Investment Officer for Fixed Income at RBC Blue Bay Asset Management. We may not like it this morning, but actually it's healthy behavior. Doesn't feel healthy, but yeah, let's take a look at just how bad things got yesterday. Look at the Kospi Index. All right, still way up on the year, but these are daily candles here. One big red middle finger to South Korean investors here, down 910 points yesterday, 9.99% lower on the day. That's even after the circuit breakers were triggered. And look at the RSI. It's not even oversold. It's still only sitting here at about a 50. We've seen big bouts of volatility like this. All right, there's the move yesterday. We saw this big move in early June. Remember, we had some big gaps down in South Korean stocks. Back in February, we had a couple of days in a row of record moves in South Korean stocks. Remember, guys, volatility is signs of a top. And, well, this market's more top-heavy than it has ever been at any point in history. One of those reasons is SpaceX. SpaceX just launched its first bond sale, and the stock market doesn't like it. SpaceX stock sank Monday. The shares have lost some magic after the company's mega IPO as investors digest news of a new bond offering. SpaceX said Monday that it would issue its first investment-grade dollar bonds. The company's raising an unspecified amount. It's actually $20 billion. To repay outstanding borrowings under its bridge loan facility. SpaceX noted alongside the bond announcement that as of June 19th, it held approximately $100.8 billion in cash and cash equivalents. SpaceX had just raised $85 billion in its IPO. The news of the bond offering appeared to weigh on SpaceX. The stock closed at $154.60, down 16.4% for the day, while the S&P was off by just 0.4%. It's a third consecutive loss for SpaceX, shedding $400.8 billion in market value for the day, the second largest one-day market value loss for any U.S. company on record, according to Dow Jones market data. Again, the biggest being January 27th and NVIDIA. SpaceX closing market value was $2.04 trillion. That is not the only SpaceX news we have here this morning. AI startup Reflection signs computing power deal with SpaceX. Reflection AI said on Monday it has signed a deal with SpaceX that will grant the startup access to additional computing capacity at Elon Musk-led company's Colossus 2 data center. Under the agreement, the open-source AI startup will get immediate access to NVIDIA's GB300 AI chips used to train and run advanced models and has agreed to pay SpaceX $150 million per month beginning July 1st, as in like next week, July 1st, through 2029, CBS reported, citing materials viewed by the publisher. And the crazy thing here, they're going to pay SpaceX $150 million per month, even though in November, the headlines, they were bragging that Reflection had $20 billion or $20 million in revenue. So how are you going to spend $150 million a month in rent when your total annual revenue is only $20 million? I have no idea. I guess they're going to have to get more money from NVIDIA in order to rent NVIDIA's product. But that was the other SpaceX news going on. And look, SpaceX had a rough, rough day yesterday. There's that $154 closing price, off by 16.4%, second worst day in history for any single stock. Right now, it's down about another 3% ahead of the opening bell, trading right around its IPO price. Remember, the IPO was priced at 135. The initial trade, as soon as it opened, was at 150 even. So SpaceX is now right back where they were, still valued at, you know, close to $2 trillion here, but way down in just a couple of days. All right. Now let's talk about what's going on in Iran. And this deal just keeps getting better and better. And by better and better, I mean just horrible, absolutely terrible. Iran says $12 billion to be unfrozen ahead of Rubio's Gulf tour. All right, let's just point out the obvious here. Iran says is an asterisk. All right, and Iran says a lot of things, kind of like our guy says a lot of things, and rarely does any of it end up being real. People say shit sometimes. Iran said $12 billion of its frozen funds were set to be released as part of ongoing talks with the U.S., with the two sides broadly signaling progress in negotiations to formally end their war. Plenty of tensions remain, including over Israel's war and with Iran-backed Hezbollah in Lebanon, and the U.S. has yet to confirm how much Tehran will get in unfrozen funds. Iran will get two installments of $6 billion each, the country's semi-official MER news agency reported, citing Deputy Foreign Minister Kazem Gharibabadi. Again, this is Iran says, but that being said, it looks like the U.S. is ready to go out and support this. The unfreezing of funds, as well as the U.S. waiving sanctions of Iranian oil exports and pledging to help set up a $300 billion rehabilitation fund for Iran, has provoked criticism of President Trump. Iran hawks fear the Islamic Republic will use the money to rebuild its armed forces and continue to support militant groups such as Hezbollah. You think? Because that's what they always do with their freaking money. Yes, of course, that's what they're going to do with it. We're just arming the next generation of the Iranian military. So we got that going for us. J.D. Vance, Trump's vice president and the lead negotiator for the U.S. on Monday, said Iran would buy American soy, wheat, and corn with the funds it receives. Yeah, okay. Nice effort to whitewash this. Oh, don't worry. It's farmer support. That's what this is. We're not bribing our enemies. No, we're supporting our farmers. Meanwhile, Secretary of State Marco Rubio is expected to land in the UAE on Tuesday as the U.S. seeks to reassure regional allies that the interim agreement it signed last week with Iran is good for their security and economies. It really isn't. This deal isn't good for anybody. All right, so that's what everybody is talking about with the Iran news. Now we've got to talk about this one. Shin on X is an open source intel account that I've been following here. And he's talking about widespread banking service disruption across Iran, ongoing for 2 hours. This was earlier this morning. Confirmed service disruptions at Iranian Meli Sadarat Tejaran, I'm sure I'm mispronouncing this, due to cyber attacks. All right. And the interesting thing is those banks apparently have had issues going close to 2 weeks now. I found this article in Iran Wire. Disruptions at four major Iranian banks remain unresolved. Now, it's worth pointing out here, Iran Wire is a news outlet that is highly critical of the Iranian regime, right? This is a very pro-Western, anti-Iranian government news source. But that being said, this story does line up with what the OSIN channels are reporting and what I did find elsewhere. Disruptions in the online systems of four of the country's major banks, including Bank Meli, Bank Tejarat, Bank Sadarat, and the Export Development Bank of Iran, have entered their 10th day and the remote services of these banks continue to face severe issues. During this period, customers have encountered widespread restrictions in conducting financial transactions and using online and mobile banking services. While the Coordinating Council of Banks had announced efforts over the past few days to restore services to normal, recent remarks by Mehsam Zohourian, a member of the Iranian Parliament's Economic Commission, have shed light on new dimensions of the disruption. Following a meeting attended by the Minister of the Economy, the Governor of the Central Bank, and the CEOs of the affected banks, Zohourian announced that the source of the disruption was an attack on the shared core infrastructure and service layer of these banks. The infrastructure is managed by the Informatics Services Corporation, or ISC, and also supports part of the country's payment networks, including Shitab and Shaparak. I don't know what any of these names mean. According to Zohourian, despite investigations conducted by various agencies, the exact origin of the attack has not yet been determined, and even replacing the hardware has failed to fully resolve the problem. He emphasized that this indicates the disruption is not merely a simple technical glitch and could stem from a more complex crisis within the country's banking infrastructure. Now, that is kind of serious there. All right, we're in the 10th day of this cyber attack. And again, will they really tell us if this is a banking crisis and that's why things are going down? Probably not. They're saying they replaced the hardware. So if you have some infected software, if you just cut out the machine and then you replace it, then you should have solved the problem. But that hasn't solved the problem. This technical glitch is now in its 10th day. And here again, this is an anti-regime news source, but they're saying this could stem from a more complex crisis within the country's banking infrastructure. Remember, all of this series of events was set in motion by a bank failure last fall that led to the collapse of the currency, which led to the protests, which led to the regime killing the protesters, which led to Israel convincing the U.S. that the Iranian government was about to fall, which led to the launching of this war, which led to this awful memorandum of understanding. And it looks like we're giving them all of this money right as their banking system may have been on the brink of collapse. Snatching defeat from the jaws of victory here. Again, there's a lot of ifs, and you know these are not mainstream news outlets by any measure. But I would say, based on the limited research I was able to do this morning, this is at least credible. This cyber attack did happen 10 days ago, and now you've got people reporting on the ground banking service disruptions, maybe part of some wider crisis in Iranian finance. Boy, they could really use, I don't know, hypothetically, $12 billion of unfrozen funds right about now. And we have got issues on the ground in Russia as well. Six Russian regions implement emergency fuel rationing as shortages spread. We read about fuel rationing in Crimea yesterday. Now we've got six different Russian regions a day later. And again, I can almost pronounce some of these. Six Russian regions: Omsk, Irkutsk. And the only reason I know Irkutsk is because I love to play Risk. Saratov, Voronezh, Amur, Tambov have introduced strict limits on fuel sales to prevent panic buying and market speculation, according to announcements made by regional governors and local officials. And this article goes on to list each of the six regions and the varying degrees of rationing that are going on. Some are letting only the government agencies buy fuel. Some are saying you can only have 40 liters. Some are saying you can only have 30 liters. Some are saying you can't fill up gas cans, only your vehicles. Remember, guys, Russia is widely considered, or what's the saying? Russia is a gas station masquerading as a country, or a gas station with nukes, the other version of it. Well, they're not a gas station anymore, apparently, because they got no gas. And this is one of the most energy-rich countries in the world. This goes to show you how devastating these Ukrainian drone attacks on Russian infrastructure have been. And again, it's not to say that the Ukrainians are not taking their shots in this war. Entire swaths of the country have been leveled. But when a country as energy-rich as Russia is unable to supply fuel to its own people, something is majorly wrong on the ground here. All right, now on to the private equity, private credit, and dog shit debt markets. BBVA unloads AI risk with $2 billion infrastructure-linked SRT. And SRT stands for either synthetic risk transfer or significant risk transfer, depending on who you ask. And we're going to have to file this one under I freaking told you so, because BBVSA is close to completing a significant risk transfer to hedge some of its rapidly expanding portfolio of AI-related lending. The Spanish lender is finalizing an SRT deal tied to around 2 billion euros or $2.3 billion US of infrastructure loans, according to people familiar with the matter, who asked not to be identified because the transaction is private. More than a third of the reference portfolio consists of financing for digital infrastructure, they said, adding that final terms are subject to discussions with investors. BBVA is one of an increasing number of banks making broader use of SRTs, tapping into growing investor appetite for the instruments. So far this year, it has completed at least three SRT deals tied to loans with a combined value of 7.5 billion euros. That's according to company statements from March and April. It's also lending more for data center projects, with total exposure rising to around 5.2 billion euros at the end of 2025 from just over 300 million euros in 2023. That's according to the global head of sustainability and corporate and investment banking, Javier Rodriguez Soler, in a presentation back in March. Banks use SRTs as a way of insuring loans against default, typically obtaining protection for between 5 and 15% of their value in return for coupons that often exceed 10% at current benchmark rates. The deals help lenders increase their solvency ratios as well as manage exposure to specific industries or borrowers and free up capital for more profitable lending. Yeah, so in other words, what an SRT does is it allows you to transfer the risk of those loans going bad off of your books onto the books of investors, and those investors are almost always pension funds that are buying this. So this is just one more way that unsuspecting retirees, savers, pensioners are being used as exit liquidity for this AI bubble. They're being used to finance this build-out that is not generating any returns for anyone except the billionaires that own these companies. And we got that other bubble we got to talk about real quick too. Apollo Cap's private credit fund again after 17% request to exit. The problems in private credit keep getting worse. Apollo Global Management is once again limiting withdrawal requests from its largest non-traded private credit fund for retail investors as broader concerns about the asset class persist. Apollo Debt Solutions, which has roughly $25 billion in assets, capped withdrawals at 5% outstanding shares on Monday after investors asked to redeem 16.8%, according to a shareholder letter. Redemption requests in the quarter were higher than the 11.2% investors wanted to pull in the prior period. And that's the big takeaway right there, guys. 17% up from 11%. The problems in private credit are getting worse. Even more people want their money back, and they're not getting it. They are being limited at 5%. Again, the reason they're doing this, if they gave everybody their money back, they would have to sell those assets, and those assets are not worth what they're telling people they're worth, which means they wouldn't have enough money to give back to everybody. And so to avoid those losses, they're just gating redemptions, telling people it's for their own good. All right, guys, I'm just going to check in one more time before we wrap up here with the NASDAQ. NASDAQ currently down 942 points. So it's going to be a rough one out there today. Not sure. Maybe this is the bubble. Maybe this is it. Of course, it would happen while I'm on vacation, right? That's just kind of how the 2020s goes. I don't know if this is it, but volatility often marks the top, and things have been awfully volatile lately. So I wouldn't be terribly surprised if this was it. In the meantime, guys, I just want to say thank you very much for having your coffee with the Melon Heads this morning. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button on the way out. Thank you very much to my magnanimous Melon Heads on YouTube and Patreon, and Buy Me a Coffee for supporting the channel. Links down below should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.